Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Fort Worth in Texas. And today I welcome the author of The Body Deva, Working with the Spiritual Consciousness of the Body. Mary Mueller-Schutan is the spiritual leader and teacher with an extensive background in Chinese medicine, craniosacral therapy, zero balancing, and energy work. She has written several books. One of these includes The Spiritual Awakening Guide. And today's book, though, is our subject, The Body Deva. It's a joy to welcome Mary to today's show. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And it's counterintuitive, isn't it, to talk about the body, Deva, because, you know, certainly in traditional religious circles, especially in the West, Christianity, there's a sort of a divide between the body and the spirit, you know, and we're supposed to check out of our bodies eventually and find our reality, which is spirit. And I think that came about with the Greeks. We had that idea, but certainly the Hebrews didn't. They felt like the body, the breath, and spirit were one, and that's true in the East as well. I think that there is a they nest together. So this is the idea that within us we have a wisdom body, right? The body itself is wise. It could teach us a lot.
Yeah, and so it's really bringing us back to considering that our bodies do have all this great wisdom, has this great knowledge, and really has this consciousness that we can tap into to understand ourselves on a deeper level.
And I know, again, you know, some people are into this, and I think even in the New Age or New Thought movement, which is what Unity is part of, there's that sense of my true reality is spirit, you know, that everything else is an illusion, if you like. And Course in Miracles teaches that, I think. But really, you know, I've never subscribed to that view because I feel like the body and spirit, you know, as we said, they are one, right? They are a whole. You can't have the one without the other. If you're embodied, yes, there's an element of the unembodied, but once it becomes embodied, it's the thing itself. So rather than checking out of our bodies, you know, it's your book invites us to become more acquainted. You know, and I got to admit that, you know, in some ways I've had less than an intimate relationship with my body. You know, it's like been a problem in a way. You know, well, I got this body, but it's not the reality of me. But you know, as I grow into loving my body, my wife has helped me with this because she's, you know, grounded in her body. She does a lot of body work. And it's helped to come home to, you know, the who I am, you know, as a whole being, a holistic being.
Yeah, and so a lot of times when I look at people, you know, I do energy work and, you know, all of that body work and all of that. I look at people and a lot of us are just living basically in our heads. You know, we're really disconnected from our bodies. We're disconnected
right.
from nature. We're disconnected from one another, and as you pointed out, you know, a lot of spiritual systems, you know, especially ones that have come through the West, are about, you know, spirit being somewhere else, you know, or us kind of considering things to be an illusion. what I've found through my own spiritual path, as well as studying of Eastern and some of the, you know, kind of deeper Western traditions, is that if we consider our bodies as kind of on a continuum, where our physical form is just kind of the densest thing, you know, really the idea of this book is that we are consciousness, we are spirit, and it's by looking within that we can really, you know, heal ourselves, we can really discover who we are, our potential, everything from, you know, kind of why does my back hurt to what is going on with my spiritual past sort of thing.
And they're all connected, right? You have a lovely quote here on page 16. It says, the more flow we have in our bodies, the more flow and ease there is in our daily lives. Stuck and painful areas of the body often reflect stuck and painful beliefs. And so, they work together, right? It's a chicken and egg thing. You can't tell which came first often. But we do know that the more flow we have, the more we allow ourselves to flow as the universe flows, right? Because we're part of the universe, and the universe is in constant flux and motion. And that's okay. That's the way it is, right? It's not always so, as the Zen masters say.
Yeah, so if we look at kind of yogic views or hermetic views of the universe, they talk about what is within is without. And so where we notice blockages in our bodies internally is also likely where we're going to notice blockages, you know, in our careers, in our relationships, in our, you know, what is going on in our outer reality. And so if we look at ideas like the world is an illusion, you know, we really can take that back a little bit and say that we project a lot onto the world based on, you know, what's unhealed within us, based on how we see the world. And if we're able to heal that by looking within, by using the body deva, you know, by, you know, becoming more embodied, by really looking towards spirit, whatever that may involve, we really can heal within and without as well.
So for those who may not be familiar with that term, deva, can you just say what you mean by that?
It's really talking about the spirit of the body. So in some traditions, it could be likened to kind of an inner deity. But really what I'm talking about is the inner consciousness, the inner wisdom, up kind of on the same length as intuition, but focused on the body. And, you know, so basically, for simplicity, we can say intuition, but it can have a lot of different meanings.
Right, exactly. And of course, it's a Eastern term or Sanskrit term, meaning, as we said, the spirit within, or the God within, almost, because it's a name for God also in the East. You've had a lot of approaches in a lot of expertise in many areas, and I mentioned a few in the introduction. But you find these all complement each other, right? You're talking about craniosacral therapy and zero balancing, and I know you'd studied Reiki, I think, and other modalities, right? These all come together.
They do. You know, there was a point in my past where, like, I really was looking at all of these different models, all of these different forms of spirituality, and hoping that they would come into kind of like a neat and tidy whole. And that isn't, unfortunately, what I found. What I did find is that a lot of times when you go to something that is working well, whether it be a modality or a brand of thought, is that they will be describing or kind of offering a key or gateway to, you know, what is ultimately ineffable, what we ultimately can only feel, what we ultimately can only know. And so what I found is that, you know, there are all these sort of keys around, or there are all these different sort of perspectives that added on or resonated with who I was or brought me a bit further on my path, but that none of them were describing necessarily the totality of things, or, you know, this is the one solid static truth out there. So I very much have worked in my path with working with different modalities and understanding that a lot of them have brought an incredible amount to my life, but that I've needed to explore different things to get different vantage points and to kind of bring me to different places on my path and, you know, kind of deepen my path.
I find that, you know, ultimately, once you go beneath the surface of things, you find that there are an enormous amount of commonalities. You know, my interest is world spirituality, and the mystical tradition is common to all religions. You know, the religions may differ on the surface and in terms of ritual or whatnot, but once we get into the essence of what's really being spoken about, right, there's that amazing commonality. And you mentioned that in the one of the early chapters, you know, that we are invited to find out who we are, really, right? What's truly going on? And if we're just in our heads, we're certainly not the whole person. And if we're, you know, tripping out into bliss states of spirit, we're not really grounded. And likewise, if we're only focused on our bodies and cannot see anything beyond the physicality of who we are, then that's not helpful either, right? So we do need to integrate all parts of ourselves and allow everything to flow naturally together.
Yeah, exactly. For example, during an early part of my career, I worked on people who are professional athletes as well as Olympic athletes, and they would do things, you know, they had these highly developed bodies that were basically like machines, but they were also, you know, pretty disassociated from them because they would have to do things like be in enormous pain and still, you know, compete in an event or something like that. And so we definitely do need a kind of understanding of the whole continuum of who we are, which is body, mind, emotions, you know, spirit. And really, I talk about this a lot in the book. It's like we really need to understand things like our emotions, emotional intelligence, what it is there for, why we experience emotions. And it's by really learning about ourselves and going to that deeper place in ourselves that we can start to see on an individual level those commonalities that you're talking about, how we're all connected, how, you know, spiritual traditions are all connected, as well as discover our individual reasons for being. Because, you know, if you look towards spirituality, what gets popularized are these dictionaries of like, oh, if you have low back pain, it's, you know, because you have low self-worth or something like that. And, you know, maybe some people haven't read some of these, but, you know, it's pretty common that these like one-for-one sort of mental ratios are out there. And what I found through my path is that, you know, somebody can have back pain for, you know, 20 different reasons. And if 20 different people come in my clinic, that, you know, 10 of them may have, you know, different reasons than the other 10 for why they're in pain. And so it's really looking at that individual level, at that, you know, mind, body, spirit level that we can, you know, really heal.
Right. Now, traditional medical system, you know, for all its wonders, because there are some wonders that it does, you know, would probably prescribe, you know, one medicine for all those people, you know, because that's the way it approaches things. Instead of looking at the whole person, it tends to focus on the particular symptom or the particular ailment or whatever. And I think many of us, you know, understand that that's limited. There's got to be a more subtle approach than that. And you do that, of course, all through the book. But by invoking the wisdom of the body, of the deva of the body, right? And I love that part of the book, actually, that where you have exercises and visualizations, and they're very down to earth, right? You invite, you say hello to your deva, you invite them to be present, and then you ask a series of questions, but they're gentle, but they're firm questions, and kind of help us through, you know, because I think there's a tendency sometimes to maybe imagine things, you know, that aren't really there. And I think that the techniques that you're using help us get beyond that, right? So we're actually in an honest dialogue with our inner self rather than, you know, making up stories about it.
I mean, that is a pretty common difficulty, is that because we are so focused in our heads, we very much live from that space and that. So in this book, we really go into our bodies and into aspects of our body that may not feel right or may feel kind of offline or just out of balance, or maybe we know that there is an imbalance there from, lab tests or whatever is going on with us. And the focus is on communicating with that body part or with the body deva as a whole, because you're looking for that imagery for some shift in that body part, either in what you're visualizing there, but really what you're looking for is a shift in your life, because it is really easy for people to go into these mentally created realities, and mental healing can do so many wonderful things, but there is a caution and a difficulty for people to get really stuck in self-creating out of, I call them loops, but it's like if we have trauma, in our inner 6-year-old or something, really, her parents got divorced and she is, let's say, she went to live with her mother, and so she's creating all these fantasies in her head about her father. That isn't her current reality, and that's not really going to be helpful for her healing. That's just kind of an inner aspect of self, just kind of creating, and sort of doing these wish fulfillment sort of things and not connecting her more, not moving her more towards wholeness. That was just a kind of a simple example, but it's basically really easy to get locked into our heads and to create a lot of unhelpful stuff for ourselves. And so in this book, I'm very careful about telling people, here are questions that you should ask, and here's how to really look to your body and your life to see the effect of this.
Well, I think it's awfully important points because, even in unity and new thought, and the very name new thought, the danger is you become a thought rather than anything else. Great, it's a new thought, but it's still a thought, right? So this idea that, well, we could just throw an affirmation on something and it'll all be well, and that may work, and it's certainly got a power. I'm not knocking affirmations, they're very powerful, but there's more going on, right? Sometimes we have to look at the dark side, right, the shadow within ourselves in an honest way, and we don't want to just bypass it by going straight to the solution when the solution may be in the problem itself rather than, affirming ourselves beyond the problem. So I think we're, as the unity movement unfolds, we're seeing that, we need to do some of that work, and that's important. And I love this book because of that, because there's many books that talk about a mind-body connection, but this one's different because you're actually talking about the wisdom in the body, and that's powerful to me because it's a nuanced way of looking at things, a little different to some of the approaches we have, I think, in many books. I wanted to tell us about body maps because that seemed like an interesting concept. Tell us more about that.
We have a conceptualization of ourselves. And so in the book, I teach people to draw themselves as basically stick figures. So you don't need a lot of artistic talent. In fact, I drew, stick figures in there, in there myself. And what we will find is that if we really sit for a moment and consider our body map, or what we would look like as a stick figure, it's likely that there are going to be aspects of ourselves or kind of aspects of that stick that either aren't present, or maybe they're a really thick line instead of just like a neat, nice line. And so that's a really wonderful place to start, with really understanding our body consciousness, because we can really sit with things and discover, oh wow, my neck hurts all the time because there's this huge thick line there. Maybe I should go look with the body deva what's going on and why that feels so stuck. Or, I draw my body deva and there's kind of dotted lines where my legs should be. Oh wow, that really makes a lot of sense. I don't really feel grounded. I don't really feel a part of things. Let me kind of focus on that area. So it's a good way to start to discover yourself in the embodiment process, and it's also a tool to learn what areas of your body perhaps you should work with, and it's also a great way for somebody to go back after the work and to see what sort of progress has been made. So it's one of those really simple tools that I learned that, you know, one of those things that people can look at that's so simple, but it's so effective.
And, you know, my tendency when I do something like that is to not pay attention to the inner and just be in my artistic mode or whatever, even if it's just stick figures, and just do the figure. But you're talking about doing something more than that, right? You're making an intentional connection with your day for when you're drawing this.
Yeah, you're doing that intentional connection to the wisdom of your body, and through that intuition, through accessing it, you're really getting a sense of what would I look like as a stick figure? Like, what would be kind of online? What would be offline? What's maybe stuck in me? What's sort of energetically not there? And it seems like a strange question as we're talking about it, but when you do the activity in the book and you really start to consider this, it really does bring out some important points about your body. Either, you know, a lot of people start from a place of being like, you know what, I've never really considered how embodied I am or what may be going on in my body before, and that's like a perfect place to start with. Can also be for people who've been doing this work for, you know, 20, 30, 40 or whatever years, but a lot of times, you know, we lack so much intelligence in our culture about embodiment, about emotional intelligence, about, you know, spiritual intelligence. And so really getting people to consider these things for the first time, something like drawing out the body map or considering where you may be embodied or not, or what may be out of balance in your body through drawing yourself as a stick figure, as silly as it sounds, is really effective to start that kind of conversation and consideration with yourself.
Absolutely. Well, you know, personally, I find dream work quite fascinating because to get in touch with my body deva, if you like, because, you know, the wisdom will teach you a lot through dreams, you know, through the very, and it's amazing how subtle and fascinating dreams are, you know. How did your body mind come up with all this stuff? It's quite fascinating. But there's a lot in there that can help me. I know you don't do a whole lot of that in the book, but it's another aspect, I think, of allowing the wisdom to speak to us, right? Because sometimes we block it so well that we need something beyond. I guess that's why we go to therapists or whatnot, people who do body work, because you know, when we can't do it ourselves, there's those that can. You know, if you go to a psychic that you trust, for instance, that could lead you into regression or whatever. You know, a lot of things can come forth in that way, right? Because we've moved beyond this gatekeeper called our egos, you know, which tends to stop us from having a truly meaningful experience or shift. And that's another thing I wanted to say. To me, it's fascinating. The life path is wonderful because everything's for learning, right? There is nothing that's there to be a problem to us. Even our blocks are actually our greatest learning experiences if we can see them for what they are, right? It's not a question of, if only I didn't have this, you know, they would be great. This is here because, you know, it's the best thing for you to learn, right? So this book is not about overcoming all the problems you have. It's seeing these so-called problems in a new light, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the things, you know, when we're talking about the topic of like kind of shadow work or doing this work where you're delving deeply within yourself and you're internally questioning, is that you can start to do things like really look to the outer world. For example, the way that I work with people is that if I get, you know, beyond kind of momentary irritation or whatever is going on with people, like if I get really upset or triggered by somebody, that typically is something within myself that I need to look at. And so I'm talking about beyond like kind of momentary irritation at somebody being, you know, inconveniencing you or something like that. But
right.
You really can, through this work or through spiritual work in general, and there are other spiritual paths that talk about this, is look to the outer world to see what you have unhealed within, and, you know, all of those things that you're talking about, like, you know, dreams and affirmations. Like, dreams, certainly I don't necessarily talk about them in the book, but in terms of dreams, you know, we live in such a world that is, you know, such a scientific materialist world where we're told this is the only thing that's valid. And that is such a small aspect of the continuum of who we are and, you know, kind of what is reality. And so in our dreams, we don't have that sort of psychic sensor. We can more deeply access ourselves. We can more deeply access our wisdom and even things like a body deva. And so, you know, it's really by having our life path and exploring and all those sorts of things that, you know, we can use things like the body deva and affirmations and, you know, dream work and all of this stuff that can only bring us closer to, you know, who we are.
When you're talking about the outer world, you're talking about mirroring, aren't you? When we see out there what's in us, you know, we wouldn't see it out there unless it was in us. And that can happen so easily on the road, you know, when we come up against somebody that's acting in the way that irritates us. If you really look at it, you say, well, why am I attaching to that? You know, so it's a wonderful growth experience, except that, you know, as the ego wants to hold on and be in enmity. But if we can move beyond that, and you have a wonderful example of it in the book, of an accident that happened on the street, you know, there's different ways we can approach this from how centered we are. Folks, we're coming towards the break on our show. I'm with Mary Mula Chutan, and her book is called The Body Deva, and working with the spiritual consciousness of the body. It's available in all the usual outlets. It's published by Findhorn Press, I believe. Wonderful press. Originating in Scotland, and now as an imprint over here in the good old US of A. When we return, we'll look at the various blocks and resistances that we can overcome by looking at them clearly using this approach that Mary has. So join us then after these messages from Unity. And by the way, thanks for listening to this show and all the other shows on Unity Online Radio. You can check my World Spirituality Facebook out. Go to my website to pauljohnroche.com, find out more. All right.
Experience the difference. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
When listeners like you contribute to Unity Online Radio, you're making a positive difference in your life and the lives of other spiritual seekers. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate to make a one-time donation, or sign up for monthly contributions. Thank you for your support.
Here is a Unity Mindful Moment with Catherine Ponder, taken from a classic talk called The Prosperous Truth, recorded at Unity of Austin in 1991.
Now, basically, one wonderful thing about The Prosperous Truth is this. Whatever you need next, most in your life, whatever you need next, most in your life, begins to come to you when you study the prosperous truth, because the word prosper means wholeness. Therefore, when you study the prosperous truth, it becomes a very soul-satisfying process, because it reaches you wherever you are at your level of growth and understanding, and gives you what you need at that point.
To find out more about Unity teachings, visit unity.org.
Follow Unity Online Radio on Facebook and Twitter, and stay up to date with all your favorite shows. Become a fan by clicking the like button. You can join in with a Facebook Live event or just like and share our post. Be the first to find out about any big special guests that might be appearing on the air or any events at Unity Village. We want to hear from you. Make sure you leave any questions or comments about Unity programming. Thanks for listening.
Healing ourselves, our communities, and the planet is the theme for this year's World Day of Prayer, September 13th at Unity World Headquarters at Unity Village. Join us live or participate virtually as we broadcast to Unity and New Thought communities around the world. The World Day of Prayer is a unique and inspirational event like no other. Enjoy music, prayer, and meditation as we commit to healing ourselves, our communities, and our world. Go to worlddayofprayer.org for more information.
Stretch your mind and open your heart every Thursday at 10 a.m. Central with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien and the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way. Gain insights into spiritual principles that touch upon the most practical aspects of our lives, like work, relationships, health, and diet. Discover time-tested practices from the ancient system of Kriya Yoga, a philosophy for living a more fulfilled life in today's hectic world. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. You're in segment two of our show on the Body Deva with Mary Mula Shutan, and we're talking about working with the spiritual consciousness of the body. And the bulk of the chapters talk in depth about various ways we are blocked and various ways that we can free ourselves from those apparent blocks. And good Lord, the ways we block ourselves, you know, we're talking about resistance, fear and various emotions, inner children that we have to deal with, the contracts we brought in with us, healing in utero is one of the chapters, family and ancestry, past lives, cultural energies, archetypes, and the many selves that we have, and then the central myth. I definitely want to get to the central myth because that fascinates me. But let's start by talking about all the resistances we have. We do resist change, don't we? Sometimes we resist what's good for us because we like to stay stuck. It's comfortable, I guess. It's the devil we know, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of times our resistance, you know, is just that fear of change. I mean, we know our universe, we know what we think, we know what we believe to be true, and so that may be a very uncomfortable known, that may be a terrible known, but, you know, it's what is known. And so in the book, I approach resistance as I approach everything, you know, with compassion. So a lot of times our approach to resistance is to try to basically kind of force our way beyond it. And so it's really through having compassion for our resistance and allowing for it to have a voice that we can work with it and even have it be an ally in our process instead of basically trying to go at war with an aspect of ourselves.
Right, and that's true all the way through the book, I think, and that's what I like about it. That's what I like actually about depth work in general on the spiritual path is that we're about integration, you know, integrating all that we are. It's not a block unless we perceive it as such, right? It can be our greatest teacher, just like our enemies, quote, our enemies are often our greatest teachers because they wake us up from the complacency of our ego. So if we're always surrounded by yes men, as they say, you know, we're not going to learn, we're not going to really grow. But if come up against somebody that really pushes up buttons, wow, we need to immediately thank that person, you know, for pushing our buttons. Though it doesn't seem like that at the time, does it?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, it's our approach, you know, especially with some of the, you know, kind of new age thoughts is to turn everything in ourselves into light or something that we deem acceptable. And really, you know, when we're talking about depth work, you know, we're talking about that some aspects of ourselves may be darker, you know, even kind of monstery, or, you know, kind of, you know, goddess or really strong, or, you know, whatever is going on with us. And those are simply aspects of ourselves that we can approach with compassion and understanding. And when they're integrated, when they're heard, when they're seen, they can just simply become, you know, an aspect of ourselves. And those you know, aspects of ourselves that are wounded, that are unhealed, that we have separated from because they're not culturally or personally sort of acceptable, they can create a lot of havoc for ourselves. And not only that, they don't really want to be turned into, you know, these really light aspects of ourselves, you know, like our inner monster doesn't want to become an angel. It wants to be heard in its, you know, monstery sort of glory, so to speak.
Well, you know, you mentioned that in the book. You say that in the West, you know, especially in America, we don't really honor our emotions. You know, we have a problem with accepting that some of these negative, quote, negative emotions can be part of who we are, and so we kind of stuff them away. But of course, they don't go away, do they? They're going to come out in inappropriate ways, and we see that, unfortunately, in the rage and divisiveness and violence of our current society, right? And all the political turmoil we're in right now. I think part of it is because, you know, we can't trust our emotions, we can't trust our thoughts. Even everything is false news now. You know, it's fake. So therefore it drives you crazy. You know, there's no sense of right or wrong anymore. You know, everything is relativistic, and it's almost like a 1984 you know, understanding, if you've ever read that book, and many of us have. So you mentioned, though, in the book that, you know, all emotions are valid, right?
Yeah, and, you know, when we're talking about this, you know, it's like if we approach our anger and we're saying to our anger, you know, you are not valid, you need to turn into love, you need to be something else other than anger, what is angry within us might be our inner angry teenager, it might be our inner angry two-year-old, it might be what becomes kind of frozen or fractured in us, what is unhealed in us that has all these unprocessed sort of emotions, are aspects of ourselves when we experienced trauma that was too much for us to handle. And so that inner two-year-old who is throwing a tantrum and is really angry, you know, like, have you ever tried telling a two-year-old, like, you're not going to be angry anymore? Like, it just doesn't work. What does work is asking them, can you tell me what you're angry about? And yeah, you know what? You have every right to be angry. That was a bad situation. And you have every right to feel that angry. Can I, you know, sit with you while you're angry, while you express that anger? What do you really need to be okay? And it's through working with aspects of ourselves like this and really having that compassion and not wanting to change based off of what we believe needs to be changed, but really by working with kind of our emotions, with our emotional intelligence, with our trauma in a way so it could be seen and heard, that we can have that, you know, stockpile of emotions that is affecting the whole be healed. In the systems that I work with, you know, there is the thought that collectively we create our reality. So all of our unhealed emotions, all of what is unhealed in us, that collectively, all of that stuff from all of us goes and creates our reality. So if we just consider like our personal stockpile, you know, rage or whatever's going on, and each one of us even doing a little bit to heal that, to resolve that inner hatred, that inner animosity, that inner fear or anger or whatever, that does in some small way heals the whole.
Well, you mentioned archetypes in the book. You know, and one of them is the American dream. You know, this idea that, and many people have many different ideas about what the American dream is, but it's sort of the land of possibility, that you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, become a success or whatever. Anything's possible. And you know, in our current society and our current ethos, and the American dream is kind of soured, isn't it? It's turned into a nightmare almost. You know, we're in a society that it doesn't always provide the, you know, better life for our children than we had, which is part of the American dream. So maybe we need to reimagine then what that dream is, right? And this is part of what you mentioned. You don't have to live by the stories you've created. Like we all have inner children that are still screaming for attention or whatever. But we need to let them be heard, but they don't have to control the rest of our lives, right? Once we understand that this is just a construct, it doesn't have to be the be-all and the end-all. I think that's where we get blocked, isn't it? And we create something, we think it always has to be this way, and it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. And so in the book, I talk about trauma, and essentially what happens when we become traumatized is that we create beliefs out of that trauma. And so let's say we have an inner, you know, what happened when we were an infant is that, you know, we didn't receive, maybe there was abuse in the household, or maybe we didn't receive the love or nurturing that we needed. And out of that trauma came a belief that, you know, nobody cares for me. So this is a really common experience and common belief that emerges out of that type of trauma, is that nobody cares for me, because if the primary caregivers did not care for that infant, you know, how could anybody else? And so that person typically goes through the rest of their lives reacting to that belief and projecting that belief out onto the world. And so by healing that infant, by healing that trauma, they have the opportunity to release that belief and to realize through new, like, clearer eyes that they don't need to have that projection anymore, to kind of take back that projection by healing that traumatized self, and in that healing that belief. And through that, you know, people can become so much freer and clearer and just, you know, stop projecting so much stuff into the world, basically.
You mentioned contracts, you know, we can rewrite our contract, right? I think before we are born, we sign a contract which says anything can happen, because anything can happen. But then we come into this world and we say, no, that can't be right. Like, there's some things can't happen. If they do, it'll be a tragedy. But, you know, we've already signed the contract, you know, that if you come into this world, this universe, then anything can happen, right? So don't be upset when it does. So there's an incongruence sometimes between, you know, what's really going on and what we, how we interpret the contract. So help us with that. What is it about contracts that we need to be more skillful with?
You know, what happens is that, so we have all of these different traumas and kind of selves that sort of accumulate over time, and all of these energies that may be passed down to us from, like, you know, our families or even our ancestry or other sources, like social conditioning, like, you know, the archetypes that you were mentioning. And so sometimes we create contracts. For example, you know, if we had a really wonderful mother, we might create a contract that's like, I want to be exactly like my mother. If we had a mother that maybe we didn't want to emulate, we can create a contract that states something like, oh, I don't want to be anything like my mother. And while the first contract sounds good, especially if, you know, the mother was a wonderful person, both of those are restrictive energies, because they're in some small or large way restricting the possibilities of that person's life. So in the book, I talk about, you know, a young boy who gets made fun of by his gym teacher for not being able to climb the rope and class, and he realizes, like, 30 years later, when doing all this CrossFit stuff, that he's doing it all for that gym teacher to prove to him that he's not, you know, a weak little kid that can't go up the rope. And so he starts to realize that he needs to, you know, do this for himself. And so what happens is that the more things that we have unhealed within us, the more sort of beliefs and stuff that happens to us, is that they all sort of become kind of like puzzle pieces within us that sometimes don't quite, you know, match up, or different parts of ourselves can seemingly be at war with other aspects of ourselves. And so it's really by healing and resolving things that all of these like minor arguments to major wars that are going on within ourselves can sort of stop, and we can, you know, move forward with clarity, with clear headspace, with, you know, more wholeness, more ability to meet the world and the people in it, all of that sort of stuff.
As long as we're attached to, you know, our human self, sense of self, you know, the ego, whatever you want to call it, you know, I think then it's harder, isn't it? The more work we can do, and this is what I like about the book, it leads us in consistent and objective ways to look at the various things that come up and ask ourselves, you know, is this helpful? Is this real? Why do I want this? You know, what would it take for me to release this, etc.? So it's almost having an intelligent dialogue with your own self, and working not denying the ego's needs, but not giving in to the ego and saying, yeah, you know, you're the arbiter of this. No, there's something within me that is greater than that, that is the arbiter, and I can tap into that. And that's powerful to me. I, you know, in the times that I've made breakthroughs in my own life, it's because I saw that, you know, the ego was not the ruling power here. You know, that there was something more, much more magnificent than that in me, you know. And the more I could let go of that idea of self, personal self, you know, the more I expanded into the universe, and then the universe became me, you know, that, and all the energies were helping me. You know, they were on my side because the universe is beneficent, I believe. So this is the thing, isn't it? Once we truly enter into the depth of our own bodies, we realize that the body is the universe, right? That it's not like a separate physical thing. It's part of the flow, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we aren't separate. It's not like we have a physical body and our spirit is, you know, somewhere else. You know, we are a continuum of energies. We are what is outer, what is inner. And, you know, you just described that so beautifully, is that our minds create, or egos or whatever, you know, ego mind, whatever you want to call it, they create out of trauma. And so, you know, out of that trauma comes all of those beliefs, all of those restrictions. And it's like, if we heal that trauma, if we heal those mental facets, those beliefs that go along with that trauma, what happens is that who we truly are can emerge, our soul, our spirit, you know, our potential, because so many of us just spend so much of our time sort of fighting with all of these aspects of selves that are just in all these beliefs that really come from wounding, that come from trauma, that comes from stuff that is illusion, that, you know, it isn't true. You know, maybe it was true at one point, but, you know, in the book I ask a lot, you know, for people to look within and ask, you know, is this my current consciousness? Because chances are, you know, if you are 20, 30, 40, 70 years old, is that who that belief is coming from? Might be, you know, a 2-year-old or 20-year-old or 15-year-old. It isn't going to be who you currently are.
You know, it's a mess being alive, isn't it?
It really is. You know, it can be a joyous mess. It can be a messy mess. But yeah, it's a bit of a mess sometimes.
But, you know, I think that's part of the fun, though. You know, it's the mess. It's the juicy bits that make it worthwhile. You know, if we were all self-contained, never feeling anything, never screwing up, never being traumatized, you know, we wouldn't really be alive. We'd be like a statue, right? So I guess messy is fine. You know, I as a minister, I've seen many dead folks, you know, and been there at the passing. And there's a whole difference between the fuzzy, messy, alive person and this cadaver, which is kind of still and statue-like, you know. And I wouldn't swap one for the other. Of course, it's going to happen to us all. But the messy is full of energy and light, life and possibility, you know, which is the life force in us, I guess. So, you know, I sort of celebrate messy now rather than say, oh, God. You know, what a screw up we all are. It's part of the learning process, I think. So I choose to embrace it. Before I don't want to miss this. Let's talk about the central myth, because I thought that was a powerful chapter.
Yeah. So in terms of the central myth is that, you know, when we start working, so the Body Deva really is a, you know, method of self-inquiry. It's of looking within, working with this consciousness of the body. And so what you begin to discover is that you do have kind of a central myth, or you have a story or two that really is guiding your life. And so this could be, you know, the quest for the grail, or, you know, the American dream. And I mentioned a bunch of other myths that are out there. But, you know, as you start to work on yourself and start doing this depth work, what you discover is that you are, you know, and it's kind of a form of contract, you are hanging on to this idea of this myth of your life. And for me, for a long time, my myth was like of that of a spiritual seeker. And I got to this point where I realized that I was continually trying to, you know, prove myself to the outer world, and continually searching and searching and searching. And, you know, the question came up of like, what would happen if you let go of this myth? You know, because it was causing me a lot of stress. You know, there's always, no matter how much you know, you start to realize that you know less and less and less. It's one of those paradoxes that's quite funny. But, and so that led me to, you know, understanding this myth and others for myself that I had put so much life force and energy into, as well as helping others kind of discover their central myth, or what at kind of the bottom of their ocean, so to speak, was really guiding them through their lives in a restrictive way. So in some way, they were creating a contract around this idea of a myth. They were creating, they were restricting energy around this idea of, you know, I need to achieve the American dream, or I need to be, have this amount of money in the bank, or whatever it was, and to let go of that, because that frees up so much energy, that frees up so much life force to not, you know, kind of have that stress or contract in your life.
And I think the key here too, it seems to me, is that once you released it, you can be it, you know, to a degree, right, without it owning you. For instance, you know, I'm Welsh, and I love Welsh culture, and, you know, my childhood and my all that, but I'm not so exclusively Welsh that I can't enjoy being American too, you know, and living in America. And so I've released that central myth of that I have to be a you know, archetypal Welshman or whatever. But because I've released it, it means I can enjoy it all the more. Does that make sense? It's sort of counterintuitive, but
yeah.
You can be something without making a fetish out of it, you know, without making it a. And I think this is again a problem in our modern society, is that, well, if you're born in the South, you can, sure, you know, be proud of the South, but you don't have to fetishize it by making it all about, you know, we're going to rise again and the Confederacy and all this, which, you know, comes with so much baggage and hate and fear and everything. But you know, you don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You could still be proud of your heritage without making it a be all and end all. I think, you know, it's all or nothing sometimes, you know, in our society and in our heads. And sometimes it's good to rest in the both and aspects of things.
Yeah, so it's, when we're ascribing to a myth, when we say we're going to be a part of this myth, that myth already has specific constructs, specific ideas with it. You know, for my own myth, and it's exactly like you described, just in a different way, is like I used to have something like 3,000 books or something like that, and I realized that I was just stressing myself out because there was more and more I needed to read, more and more I needed to know, to learn, to do, to achieve, to the point where I wasn't enjoying any of it. It was just
right. A
source of stress for me, and by letting that go, you know, I started to, you know, sell off books, but just to enjoy really, you know, deepening my knowledge, deepening my spiritual path and that sort of thing without this immense pressure there. So it is kind of paradoxical, but it very much is about letting go of that myth to kind of individually discover what you need, you know, as an individual.
Right. You could still have the books, right? But as long as, you know, you can sell them off if you want, but you can also have them, but they're no longer the encumbrance that they used to be. What's the old phrase, you know, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, after enlightenment, chop wood, carry
water. Exactly.
We do the same thing, but we're doing it in a different way, because before it was a chore, now it's, oh yeah, that's part of my body.
Yeah, exactly. And so I still have books, I still read, I still, you know, look for knowledge and all that sort of stuff. That's just letting go of that pressure. And so I see all these people who do things like have these really restrictive diets or like throw out all their belongings. And my thought is always like, maybe you could use a few more belongings, you know.
Yeah, we're talking about balance here, folks. That's what I'm hearing. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show. In 1 minute, what would you like to impart, Mary, to our audience that would be helpful to them? One pearl of wisdom.
You know, that our body really does have this wonderful wisdom, and that we do have all these wonderful outer resources that we can look at, but it's really by looking within and understanding our own individual reasons for being, and by developing skills, such as through this book, that we can really understand ourselves on a deeper level. We can understand who we are on a deeper level, deepen our spiritual path, deepen our relationships, deepen kind of who we are in a really vital way that's, you know, really needed in the world right now. So,
yeah, excellent. And I think you'll find this book very helpful, folks, because it does go into ways that you can practice it in very cogent ways. It's not just talking about it. It'll lead you through very helpfully. Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Mary. Next week, spiritual teacher, coach, and author Arjuna Adar joins me to talk about his latest book. His latest book is called Radical Brilliance, and how to release your inner brilliant self, how to have an original thought as opposed to re-channeled thoughts, regurgitated ideas. I read the book last week. It's very fascinating, so I'm looking forward to that show. Mary, if people want to get hold of you, do you have a website?
Yeah, people can go to maryshutan.com. That's Mary, SHUTAN.com.
Okay, very good. And like I said, the book's available, and so are all the other books that as Mary's written. So if this strikes a chord with you, you can get hold of these things and be benefited by them, I would say. All right, I think that's the end of the show. By the way, in a couple of weeks' time, folks, I'm going to Europe for a month. I'll be on the road. First week out, we'll be in Norway, and then we go to Widdicombe Fair in England, and then we're going to be somewhere else in England with Mary Whitehouse, the wonderful author and comedian, and then finally we'll be in Iceland. So join us on the road. I'm going to have a blog as well on my Facebook. Hope you can enjoy the journey with us. All right. Thank you, Mary. Thanks to everybody
for
listening.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.